I'm trying to ignore it, but this baseball game is tremendous.
Dude, it's such a good game.
This is so amazing, and this is the first of two.
Yes.
Oh, this,
so
this,
winner, so
this
winner,
is terrific.
Winner of game one here clinches a spot. If, let's say the Mets win
very
this
good
game.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
the Mets clinch a spot. If they win the next one, yep, Mets and D-backs are in. If they split these two games, both these teams are in.
Yep.
If the Braves come back and win both, it's them and the Diamondbacks. And this game's just been insane.
Oh, what a sense of relief it would be for the team that wins this first game, knowing you've got that postseason spot and you're set.
Oh, yeah. The vibes are going to be crazy in the second game.
Oh, this is so good.
I texted one of my friends who's a Braves fan and lives out there, and I texted him an expletive after they scored the four in the bottom of the eighth, and he sends me a photo. He's with his dad in the fourth row at this game.
Oh, my.
Like, oh no. Like, I was like, dang, that's sick. And by the time I had sent him another text, Lindor hits a two-run homer. And the Mets are like, oh no. Like, I'm so sorry. I don't know how to react. That's cool. You're there. I hope they win.
Have a hot dog. Get a beer.
Have several.
Or seven. Oh, man. What a stress-inducing day. How did two teams score a combined 10 runs in the eighth inning?
Insane.
Goodness gracious. The Mets had nothing on the board until the eighth, and now they're up 8-7 in the bottom of the ninth.
Insane.
This is amazing. We'll keep you updated on this. This is awesome, awesome theater. I know a lot of you. I know Ramsey is. I think Aldrin is. I know a lot of you are two-screening it. We appreciate you. Thank you so much for letting us be a part of this. I don't think we'll do a – we won't do a watch-along like we did in the Olympics, but this is just – absolutely fantastic theater right now with the Mets and the Braves. I'll save the lengthy discussion for Casey, but man, Georgia Bama, oh, what a epic Saturday that was. So great. We'll get to all of that. But I was trying to give the Raiders some props before I got distracted by this game. We saw them accomplish some things on the ground with their run game for the first time. Let me mention here real quick, it's D'Lo and KC on KIFM West Sacramento, 98.5 FM, KRX QHD2 Sacramento, ESPN 1320, always live and always free on the Odyssey app. You can download the Odyssey app. Hopefully, if your phone ever starts working again, I don't shout out to those affected. Thank God for Odyssey Wi-Fi, because, yeah, my phone is one of the many phones that are just dead. It's just absolutely not working. My phone works as well as the Cleveland Browns offense does. And you think about all of that. You think about the fact that the Browns go up 10-0. Raiders score 20 straight. Browns get in the end zone. Missed extra point. And Deshaun Watson gets that team still in position to win the game. Max Crosby ain't out there to put it away. And this bad Cleveland Browns team is on the verge of breaking the heart of the Las Vegas Raiders. And Charles Snowden said thanks, but no thanks. Takes Deshaun Watson down on the final play of the game. Deshaun, it was so bad. The pass that hit Amari Cooper in the chest that turned around to be intercepted is just ridiculous. You combine that with a missed PAT. You combine that with the fact that Deshaun Watson just doesn't know how to play football anymore. And you combine that with the fact that the Raiders got a running game going for the first time this year. Now, was it pretty? No. Was Derrick Henry out there? No. Jordan Mason? Nope. Collective effort, dude. That was a team rushing statistic. 29 carries, 152 yards. Derrick Henry did more than that individually, but that doesn't matter. That's what the Raiders needed. 29 carries, 152 yards collectively for that Las Vegas Raiders team on the ground, something they needed so bad. Zaire White was not good. 17 carries, 50 yards. Not good, but the 50 yards mattered because a lot of different guys touched the ball. Brock Bowers had, they ran him the ball one time. They know they have to get something going on the ground because Gardner Minshew is not the type of quarterback that you could just drop back there and hope to win you a game. Now I recognize he did. I'm going to give him credit, and I'm going to continue to give him credit. He did just that versus Baltimore. And we said at the beginning of the year, he's probably going to do that a time or two. Now, I didn't envision against that team in that setting. Didn't envision that. But he did it. And he deserves credit for it. But more times than not, you're going to get from Gardner Minshew what you got yesterday. 14 to 24, 130 yards. No touchdowns. No interceptions. That's a good look. But that's what you're going to get from him. So if you don't establish anything on the ground, like what? He's no threat. And that's perhaps the most difficult part about this for Antonio Pierce and this offense trying to navigate things is that Gardner Minshew is not a threat. So if you don't get anything going, you got defensive lines that are just going to tee off on him. Thankfully, in my head, Gardner Minshew is an old man. He very much is not. He's only an old man in my head. Gardner Minshew is still a young quarterback. He can still move around. There's still a lot that he can do. But I love this game for the Raiders, and I love the fact that without, I don't know, maybe inarguably their two most important players, their most important player on each side of the ball, Devontae Adams, Max Crosby. Yo, you get a win like that, salute. You get a win like that, even if it's against a bad Cleveland Browns team. Salute. You 2-2 now. Now we could harp on how it still might sting a little bit that they lost to the Carolina Panthers, but no point in doing that. You can't go back and change anything. It's a 2-2 Raiders team. And the tough part with this is you're just riding with the Raiders like each week. You have no idea what you're going to get. Like, absolutely none. And you could get one of those, oh, look at this game from Gardner Minshew. Maybe you get one of those games from Madison, because that's where I think we might see a shift moving forward for the Raiders. We might see him being the guy at RB1. You know, Devontae Adams returns back to the lineup again. You see signs of the defense still, you know, as bad, and it was bad, as the Carolina Panthers outing was. Yo, you still got some prideful defenders there. You got a group that plays well together. Again, a lot like the 49ers. Not going to overly praise that defense for shutting down the Cleveland Browns. But if this is two teams that are trying to find their footing in the league, the Raiders did what they had to do. There's enough there where, despite the frustration of last week for Raider Nation, there's enough there that you can feel good about them moving forward. You don't feel great, but you feel good moving forward. And the New York Mets have clinched a playoff spot. The Atlanta Braves will have to win game number two as game one of this makeup doubleheader went final. The Mets beat the Braves in this one 8-7, which again means the New York Mets have clinched a playoff spot. If Atlanta wins the second game, Atlanta will join New York in the playoffs. If New York wins a second one, then it's the Diamondbacks headed to the postseason. So drama unfolds in a spectacular 8-7 win for the Mets. The Mets scoring all eight runs in the final two innings tremendous theater here on an extra day of baseball. Very good stuff. Of course, we'll keep you updated throughout the second game. I'm guessing that game will probably still be going on when this show ends. We'll check back in at Media Day as well. I know Mike Brown is speaking. Casey, going to join the show here in studio. Just he'll come back. Media Day scheduled to end around 2 o'clock. And James Hamm, I believe, I didn't check with him. I did see him right before he left, but I believe James Hamm will be with us at 3 o'clock to give us all of his takeaways. So far, the biggest news came from Kevin Herter, where he didn't really give us any news, but he kind of said something that got our attention. So much more from Media Day ahead, much more in the NFL as well. Massive victory for the Baltimore Ravens to pull themselves back up to 2-2. The Bengals get their first win of the season. The Steelers get their first loss of the season. The Jaguars can't win a game. Oh, yo, just minding your business on a Friday. And then we get that Eastern Conference shakeup from the New York Knicks.
That was pretty wild.
That was nuts. I can't wait to talk about the Knicks and the Timberwolves, Carl Anthony Towns, what this means for both teams, how I don't think I've ever seen any offseason like what the New York Knicks have going on. And most importantly, keep it a stack, what's this mean for Sacramento? We'll tie it all together. We'll make it all work. We'll check back in on Media Day at the Golden One Center with the Sacramento Kings when Dylan McKay return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. I'd love, like, seeing DeMar in the Kings uniform for the first time. That is kind of fire. Sean Cunningham posted one of the pictures from Media Day. It's just a quick, like, video. It's like, yo, that's DeMar. That's DeMar in a Kings uniform. That's fire. Absolute fire. I love it so much. I love Media Day. I love that Kings season is back. I love that we got practice tomorrow, and we got Mike Brown talking to the media group right here, including our man James Hamm. Oh, that's cool. Yeah, no, it's good. I guess that's fantastic.
You thought what? We were a legit media company with good Wi-Fi?
No, this is great. Our internet has gone the way of Verizon. I guess it worked during the commercial break, and it said the hell with you
like
now.
Some of the adversity.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, let's try this again. Mike Brown at Media.
As are already facing, what is your take on the injuries that you're going to walk into training camp with, and how much are those going to impact what you're trying to do, whether it's Kevin, whether it's Trey or Jordan or even your rookie?
But, you know, obviously you want everybody healthy, but, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, you look back even last year when we had the injuries and it stunk and I hated it, but at the end of the day, you know, other guys got an opportunity to step up and get some invaluable playing experience that they wouldn't have gotten if guys were healthy. And so for us, it's the same thing. It's next man up, and the next guy has to step up, and we got to hold down the fort till other guys get back. But you know, injuries are a part of the game, but again, it's not something that you wish upon anybody.
When you look at Keon's success last year, how much belief in him came from weeks like this, training camp and preseason games, for that kind of grind ahead?
A lot of it did. You know, you try to watch guys' body of work, not just during the regular season, but in the summertime, and see how they grow, you know. And for me, the most important time for a guy that doesn't play, whenever they get an opportunity, they take advantage of it. I'm going to probably be wrong in this, but I remember seeing something that Tom Brady said, and you know, when he wasn't playing, whether it was in high school or college, I can't remember, even the pros, he would talk to his coach, and his coach basically told him, take every rep like it's a game rep, whether you're on the scout team or you're with the second team, third team, or even the first team, and he did. And when you embrace your opportunities like that, the sky's the limit. That's when you open guys' eyes. And for me, with Keon, we threw him into a blowout game in Houston when Fox was either hurt or he was out. And the 2 or 3 minutes he played that first time, I was thoroughly impressed. And he got another opportunity in the next game, and I was thoroughly impressed. And we got our behinds handed to us, but there were some small victories, and one of the small victories that, in my opinion, came from it was to see how valuable Keon could be for us going forward.
With adding DeMar, what's the balance between sort of optimizing him but also just getting him to fit into what you have and do your 10 staples change at all?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. We just kind of moved some things around, but he's gonna fit in fine. Now we tweak some stuff to try to enhance his abilities, but watching the film on DeMar, during the season, I just watched the Bulls, and I don't really specifically look at each individual guy and his strengths and all that. My coaches and scouts do, whoever's game it is, and the personnel guy does at the time. But going through the process of getting him to sign here, you watch him a little bit more closely, and you see that he brings the ball up in transition. You see he's able to play pick and roll and make the right read off of it. You see he's able to play the DHO game. So there are some things that I'm like, whoa, okay, we do that too, because our 1-4 are interchangeable. We play a lot of DHOs with Domas. We play some pick and roll with our 5 as well. So I think he'll fit in fine with a few adjustments from us to make sure we try to put him in spots that will enhance or showcase his abilities. The one thing that he brings to the table, though, there are a lot, but the thing I'm most excited about, I'm a firm believer in belief, you got a guy like DeMar walking through that door, it adds to the belief of everybody, more importantly the players, but everybody, as you could tell, the organization and the city. The city's excited about him, and everybody's got their chest puffed up a little bit more because of him. So I'm extremely excited about that, as well as seeing how he shows his leadership skills.
Okay. Mike Brown talking a lot there. Keon Ellis, Domantas Sabonis, and of course DeMar DeRozan, as he prepares for his first practice tomorrow. It's not going to include a couple of guys. Not going to include Trey Lyles, Kevin Herter, or Jordan McLaughlin. Can I point one thing out? It's dumb. It doesn't really have anything to do with the Kings, but I think it's super dope. Not everybody would do this. But we have such like a small crew here that kind of works together to help everybody out. But did you notice?
Yeah.
Our man Jake, for those who can't see it, Jake Gaden, CBS 13, our guy, he's kind of at the he's right by Mike, so he kind of has that position right there. If you notice, and it took me a second to catch on to this, Jake's holding 2 microphones. He's holding his microphone, and he's holding Sean Cunningham's microphone for him so Sean can do the filming.
I was trying to figure out if the video was angled weird.
Yeah, he's holding both microphones, so because all of those guys in there, you've got to do everything. And Sean is like a crew amongst themselves, so he's got that camera out there. And Jake was holding the mic for him. That's pretty dope. Shout out to our guy, Jake Gaden. Shout out to Sean Cunningham and the whole media crew out there taking part in Media Day. We'll bring you more videos when we have them. We'll bring you more sound. We'll bring you more clips, whatever we can bring you as it pertains to the Sacramento Kings and Media Day. We absolutely will. We got our first look at DeMar DeRozan in a Kings uniform today. Of course, we heard from Monty McNair earlier, and we heard from Mike Brown. You could hear his excitement. No, you can't. Like, Mike sounds like a coach. Mike sounds like a coach with expectations. Mike sounds like a coach whose practice is getting ready to start. Mike sounds like a coach who's got a very big season ahead of him. And we all have excitement around DeMar DeRozan. We all have excitement about this group coming together. DeMar, Domas, De'Aaron taking the floor for the very first time tomorrow at practice. And what that might look like a week from Wednesday, live at the Golden One Center, when the Sacramento Kings take on the Golden State Warriors in the first pregame of the season. KC, at Media Day right now. James Hamm, obviously, at Media Day right now. We will bring you, they're both, I think, KC's definitely coming back. We got another radio show to do. I think James is coming back as well, or at least plans to be with us for his 3 o'clock hit in some way, shape, or form, whether it's here or it's at his house. There's a lot more Kings talk ahead as Media Day is today at the Golden One Center. We'll get back to the NFL. We've covered the San Francisco 49ers victory against the New England Patriots. We covered the Las Vegas Raiders. Stand up, Raider Nation. And their win against the lowly Cleveland Browns. You know what we didn't do, though? Let's take a quick peek, because the Raiders now sit at 2-2. This is not a game that you could play with the Las Vegas Raiders. Be clear. This is not a game you could play with the Las Vegas Raiders. But they got the Broncos next. They got the Steelers, who suffered their first loss of the season yesterday. They got the Los Angeles Rams after that, then Kansas City, then Cincinnati, and then they'll hit their Week 10 bye. 500 is success for this team right now. Man, that Panthers loss sucks, but you just got to move on from it and keep it moving. Able to bounce back with a win without Max Crosby, without Devontae Adams against the Cleveland Browns. Now you start your focus on the Denver Broncos. Denver Broncos have done... I guess they've done some things well this year. Again, that's another 2-2 football team, but admittedly, I'm not exactly sure what they are. I mean, they beat the Jets yesterday 10-9. I don't know what to do with that. They beat the Bucks, and that was impressive. But I don't really know what to do with the Denver Broncos. Like, I'm not buying it.
I think that was more about the Jets than the Broncos.
Well, what about the week prior? They beat Tampa Bay.
It's not fair to the Broncos, but it's more about the Bucks than the Broncos. The Broncos aren't good.
I don't think that they are.
Yesterday, it was pouring the whole game or whatever. Neither offense could move the ball, but Aaron Rodgers and his wide receivers just aren't on the same page at all. And just the team is showing it's just not as good as Mike Greenberg hyped them to be.
That's a damn shame, isn't it? It's a damn shame that Aaron Rodgers and his little receivers aren't on the same page. Shoot. I'm heartbroken over it. Just heartbroken. That Packers game was kind of crazy. I'm sure we'll get to that one later. That game was nuts. I wasn't particularly thrilled with Jordan Love's choice of attire headed into the game, but he put up a Brett Favre stat line if I've ever seen one. Goodness gracious. In fact, let's just go around the league right now. We mentioned KC be back with us here in a little bit. I was trying to hold off on talking about that NBA trade till KC got here. I might not be able to. Because that's nuts. The Knicks and the Timberwolves bringing us some Friday night news is pretty crazy.
Do the one KC also moving the needle in the sports world, by the way.
Man.
Not like we were talking about trading Carl Anthony Towns. Literally, what was it, the day before?
It felt like I didn't think that they were there yet. We knew that there was one move left to make. And you outlined this a number of times over the last few months. It's the only move they can make because they can't really move Rudy. You're not moving Ant-Man. So if you're trying to do something, it's Carl Anthony Towns. The question of whether you actually did it, well, that's That's a separate conversation. But I like Julius Randle. I've always liked Julius Randle. Some people don't. I don't know. I mean, normally, like, when there's an opinion so split on a particular player, I'm just kind of like, ah, I get it. I get it. With Julius, I don't get it. I think Julius is a good ball player. Now, if we were talking about with Sacramento and there were Kings fans that I don't like the fit, I don't like him as the player, here's why I don't think it works, that I understand. But Julius, the player, to hate on him is not something I quite get. I think he's really good. And trying to figure out if this is a move for Minnesota or the move for Minnesota is interesting. Sure feels like the move for the New York Knicks, though.
It's a great move for the Knicks. Going back to Minnesota real quick, did they shut their window for the time being real quick?
I don't.
For the next year or two?
So you're talking about their window to compete for a championship.
Yeah, you could have sold me on the Wolves getting to the finals with Towns. Not me. I wouldn't have believed it, but like, you can't sell me on this team.
Really? So
not with Randle, I don't think. Dante's great, but I don't.
They
feel like a second-round ceiling team.
My biggest thing with the Timberwolves was, is there something like a little below the surface with Karl Anthony Towns? And Kat has my utmost respect, one, as a ball player, but two, all of the personal trauma he's dealt with over the last, like, 4 or 5 years. But the Jimmy Butler thing kind of lives in my head. And I know Jimmy is one of the more unique personalities in the league. And not a lot of people would make as much noise in a short time as Jimmy Butler did in the Minnesota Timberwolves organization. But man, when you read between the lines of some of the things that he said, some of the things that were printed and attributed to Jimmy Butler, it was hard to not look at Kat a little funny. Because you can call Jimmy crazy. You can call Jimmy a unique personality if you want to. I don't think Jimmy's a liar. No, that doesn't mean what he said about Karl Anthony Towns is true. It means that's his assessment of Karl Anthony Towns. And whether fair or not, and it's probably not, that situation has just lived in my head all of these years. And so I always look at Karl Anthony Towns like, I wonder. And I felt like last year was the perfect mixture of they had to accomplish like something. Like, if you don't accomplish something last year, if you fail again, you Cat's got, like, everybody's got to go. You just try to build around Anthony Edwards as best you can. But it felt like everybody was willing to put something aside to make sure that this team succeeded. I don't think there's a greater example than that 50-something point game that Karl Anthony Towns had, where Chris Finch, the Timberwolves coach, just destroyed him after the game. Because the Timberwolves lost. They lost that game. Chris Finch was talking about the level of selfishness that team displayed. He talked about the just lack of team basketball, all of these things. And I was like, man, can Kat really kind of let the reins go to Anthony Edwards? Can Kat fall back a little bit? Not to say like, oh, he's so selfish for scoring 50 points. No, but when you score 50 and some change, you lose, and your coach talks like that. It's not like he took the podium and said, yeah, we couldn't get anybody else going except Karl Anthony Towns. Yeah, Kat was out there doing it by himself. Kat was the only one this. Kat was the only one with that. He is not even remotely close to what he said. And that's why I got stuck with that. So you ask if the window on Minnesota shut. For me, I don't know if the window was ever open. But I do wonder if this is a... I'm trying to think of a better phrase, but this is the only one that I can think of. If this is an addition by subtraction type thing. Julius Randle's a really, really good basketball player. Dante DiVincenzo, I think there's some rumors about whether he's on the move again or what winds up happening there. But I thought that I read Minnesota really wanted Dante. I thought I read that in The Athletic, that they were really, really interested. The thing that really got this done was their willingness to include Dante DiVincenzo. And so I wonder if Cat being out of there, that you don't have to deal with the situation of like Cat was a 2015 number one overall pick. Like, this was his franchise. And then Anthony Edwards comes along, and it becomes clear pretty quickly, it's not your franchise anymore. Like, it's his. Not having to worry about that dynamic might do wonders for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
I can see that aspect, but it's when it comes to ability, I just don't think Julius Randle's able to feel like is enough for that.
He's not as good as Cat.
Like, even like Dante, just they're taking a step back, I think. Like, maybe the
if like they it flows did, it's better not a big just, step. I don't think it's a big step.
Well, you didn't think they were contenders. For me, I thought they could have been, and like, for me, they went from contenders to probably like a second round exit at best.
So they're out of the VIP booth, huh?
They're just in the club. They're in the club and no VIP anymore.
They're on the guest list. They just can't not VIP. All right. I mean, I know it's not the most riveting talk radio, but it's really just a wait and see. I'm not sure. This is where I got stuck, because my number one thing was, how does this affect the Kings? I don't think Minnesota got worse. Now, if you made the argument that they didn't get better, okay. Maybe the most... like, logical, well-thought-out explanation is it was... maybe a lateral move that helps them with salary, provides them with a little flexibility because of Julius Randle's contract situation. By all accounts, they landed a player they really, really liked in Dante DiVincenzo. I'm sure Julius Randle too, but in Dante DiVincenzo, I don't know.
The top three seeds last season were OKC, Minnesota, and Denver, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess pertaining to the Kings and this trade, I don't see any reason why the Kings can't be a top three team this year. Like, Minnesota's a team where you can't talk me to, oh yeah, they're definitely going to finish ahead of the Kings this year.
I think
Denver
and
OKC, maybe.
So again, I'm not fair because I didn't feel that way to begin with. Like, I wasn't sold on them. But if you drop Denver back a little bit, you could sell me on the top three teams being the Kings, the Timberwolves, and the Thunder. With Denver, like, right there, it's not like they're far back. Or those four teams, instead of those three teams being in the mix, maybe it's those four.
I mean, it just makes the West even more wide open, too.
Maybe the Kings are in a tier of their own. Maybe it's those top three, then it's the Kings firmly in a four spot, and then it's some other squad. Maybe we're wrong about the Kings. I don't think so. Oh, maybe. Again, I don't think so. But this was a stunning Shams tweet on a Friday night in salute to the New York Knicks. I have never seen an offseason like the New York Knicks have had. With OG and Mikal. Now you go out there and you get Karl Anthony Towns. You add him. You know, you add those guys with Jalen. And can they compete with Boston? That's really what it boils down to, because it's not hyperbole or it's not revisionist history to say that Boston was clearly the best team in the conference last year. Boston was clearly the best team in the league last year. Second place wasn't particularly close. That in the regular season, and then they wound up winning an NBA championship. So what the New York Knicks are doing, they're looking at the Celtics roster, realizing, you know, you got a young coach, you got a couple of young stars, and you got a pretty well-built squad. We're going to have to do something to attempt to overtake them. Like, we can't map out a five-year plan. We have to map out a plan for now. And the Knicks have gone for it. But the question is this enough to compete with the team that was clearly the best in the entire league last year?
I think now you can make an argument like the Knicks could get the Celtics in a series. I wouldn't call the Knicks favorites or anything like that, but they have enough to compete.
They definitely have enough to compete. I won't change my...
On paper, that should be really good.
I won't change my energy with them, though, because I did say I'd like to see, you know, I need to see this come together a little bit. A lot like I thought the same of New York and Philadelphia.
See, I'm out on Philly now.
You're out?
Yes, it's New York and Boston now at this point.
No Milwaukee?
No.
You didn't like Milwaukee
anyway.
Yeah,
I'm more with the Pacers than I am Milwaukee at this point.
Really? The Pacers?
Yeah.
I think my Pacers heat has cooled a little bit. Probably because of what the Knicks kept doing. There's some teams in the conference. There's a couple of teams. They got better. But I need to see this all come together. Looks great on paper. Looks amazing on paper. Need to see it all come together. Need to see how this works, because I know how Boston works.
Say what you want to, but we're sure Cat's going to work in New York?
No.
That's like what I'm saying. That's one of the things I feel like that people aren't really talking about.
Like, Cat is a... I think there's a... There's a personality dynamic to all of this.
Like, that's pressure. You're going to a team, like, you got to win rings. And the way New York media is and the way they treat the Knicks, like, it's pressure from day one, from the moment you answer a question for the first time.
You're not going to have, that's a good point, you're not going to have the kind of cushy media life that you might have had in Minnesota. That's a good call on Cat right there. And if what Jimmy Butler said about him is true...
Like, if you believe that stuff, I think that matters.
That's absolutely, if you believe that stuff, this is gonna be a tough road for Karl Anthony Towns with the New York Knicks. But a fascinating trade on the eve of training camp getting started. Speaking of training, try trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320. We mentioned the new creatine gummies are available now. You'll see the Maptrition. .com link right there on our page. When I say our page, that page was built for us. trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320 with the link to maptrition.com right there to get your creatine gummies, to get your all-day BCAAs, to get your BCAAs with the caffeine that got them in there. Just take them first thing in the morning to get access to your free macro calculator or to book your free nutritionist consultation. It's trainwithmap.fit/ESPN 1320. We'll come back. Domantas Sabonis at Media Day. You'll hear from Domas next on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Let's head back out to Media Day. Let's check in with our man Sean Cunningham and Domantas Sabonis here as King season gets underway.
Sound like we saw you.
Yeah. Not yesterday or 2 days ago?
Was it yesterday?
I don't know. I can't keep track.
It's been all together.
Yeah.
You guys ready?
You guys ready to go?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's get started.
Domas, how's it feel 2024 hitting and just media day and training camp starting tomorrow? What's the feeling right now?
Excited. You know, I'm excited. You're going to see all the faces. You know, everyone's here and it's real.
They actually see DeMar in a Kings uniform. Yeah. Is that like something like, okay, wow, like that's a thing?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty crazy. It looks good on him, and I'm excited to get started tomorrow in training.
You've gotten the chance to work with DeMar already this offseason. You talked about that a little bit already, but for the guys who are going to get to on your team experience that with training camp with him for the first time, what should they expect with working with him?
You know, he plays at his pace. but it's effective. It's effective, really effective. I feel like the more the guys ask him questions, you know, he's more than open to share, and I feel like we're all going to learn a lot just by being around him.
You said before, too, that you have to learn how to play with him and learn how to incorporate him, but also knowing your offense, how easy do you think, how great do you think he's going to just naturally fit into what you do?
I mean, we're a scoring offense, you know, and he can score on every level, so I think he's just going to fit in easily.
Continuity-wise, this is like the same roster aside from a couple tweaks from the past 3 years. Do you feel like there's maybe not a learning curve with that, and just you can guys kind of maybe pick up right from the start?
Yeah, I think that's good. You know, it makes it easier definitely for the coaches. You know, we kind of can just jump right into it, you know. They don't really have to teach everything like it was year one with Mike Brown, so that definitely is an advantage.
Mike said that the motto for this year is climbing the mountain. Just what do you think about that, climbing, I don't know, the mountains specifically?
We had a team meeting yesterday, and we basically talked about stuff around that, you know, and that's going to be our motto.
Do you like it?
Yeah, makes sense. It makes sense. It's in his words.
Domas, having spent some time around DeMar, what have you learned so far about him in terms of being like a tone setter and a culture guy for this team?
You know, he's going to come ready every game, you know, and I feel like for us, that was our problem last year. You know, we won against the best, lost against the lower seeds, and, you know, I feel like him and his leadership, he's a veteran, Hall of Fame career, you know, he's gonna make sure we're all showing up to take care of all those games.
How do you think his style, incorporating the way he plays the game into the way you guys play the game, changes things for you guys offensively?
I don't think it changes anything. If anything, it's gonna get us more open looks. You know, I mean, the defenses are gonna have to throw a lot of attention on him, you know, which kind of frees up everybody else a bit more, you know. And if they don't, well, we already know what he can do, so it's gonna be a problem.
So your thoughts on this roster and, you know, what kind of damage you guys think you can do in the West?
You know, it all depends on us. We start tomorrow, and it depends on us, you know, to come out and really take this thing serious from the jump.
You talked about the open looks. To have a guy like Keegan on the perimeter, Kevin Huerter coming back with him on the perimeter, the open shots they'll probably get more of because of DeRozan. How much does that excite you as a pass-first big man, knowing they're going to get ready?
A lot. You know, I think they're more excited than me. You know, they're going to get catch-and-shoot open shots, you know. So, you know, I can pass it, you know, DeMar, Fox has attention, so, you know, they're just going to get more and more options to be themselves.
When you see, look at Keegan, first year was the three-point, last year was really good defense. Where do you feel like he can mature in his third year?
He can talk this year maybe a little bit more.
You think so? I'd love that.
He can say good morning when he walks by me. That would help a lot.
Is there some curiosity on your part how this all kind of blends and fits together?
No, we're just excited, you know. I mean, anytime you add a Hall of Fame guy, you know, to your roster, I don't think everyone's just excited for the season to come.
How much do you feel when you looked at the roster overall that you guys were addressing areas of need for sure?
For sure, you know. I mean, he definitely helps Fox in the fourth quarter and can do what they want, you know. That, and it's up to them to battle out who wants the shot now. But you know, we're just lucky we got two guys like that who are going to show up every night.
You've had stretches where you knock down the threes like pretty efficiently, just on, you know, kind of low volume. What do you anticipate this year in terms of volume? If you think it'll go up?
Yeah, you know, the same thing. You know, I try to improve it every summer, shoot a bit better, shoot a bit more every season. You know, and that's the same mindset for this year.
Domas, you're kind of a personal guy. You like to stay away from the crowd. How difficult was it for you to open up and allow cameras and everything into your guys' lives?
You know, it was definitely different. It was something that I'm not used to, you know, but we got used to it. We got used to it. Netflix was great. The crew was the same all year, so, you know, they kind of became our family.
Are there any secrets that are coming out?
Excuse me?
Are there any secrets coming out that you want to warn us about?
Secrets about what?
I don't know, nothing.
You guys will see.
Any basketball questions?
Did you read DeRozan's book by chance?
Not yet. I'm still waiting for one in my locker.
How much will he help with maybe the leadership, the vocality, like being that voice in the locker room?
I don't know. We'll see how vocal he is and all that. You know, I've connected him on a personal level. We'll see in the locker room space. But, you know, he kind of leads by example, you know, just by him around. You kind of feel it, you know, and everyone's kind of locked in a little bit more than last year.
Getting DeMar met, HB going somewhere else, played a lot with him, starting lineup more often than not. Just kind of what do you miss with him?
It's sad, you know. I mean, in the NBA, you build these friendships. You know, we were really close. Our families were close. Our wives were close. So, you know, it's tough seeing that happen, you know. But we all know it's a business, you know. I've gotten traded. Everyone's gotten traded, you know, especially nowadays. So, you know, we just got to – kind of comes with it.
What do you make of the West right now? I mean, is it – feel like steeper competition than even last year, or is it just kind of?
Oh, for sure. You know, you have all these teams that got better. You know, Memphis is healthy again. You know, so it's Houston's coming up. So I don't know. It's tough. You know, I don't even know how it's going to play out. But if everyone stays healthy, it's going to be very. It's going to be more than last year for sure.
The league made a shift with the officiating late January. It was definitely a much more physical game. Did you enjoy how it was officiated?
Yeah, I hope it stays that way. I hope it really stays that way from game one. And I think it's just going to make a better basketball throughout the year.
You guys kind of thrived, actually. And was that surprising, though? Like, you know, Mike pushed you guys so much to get more physical. And then when that happened, you guys were ready for it.
I feel like we did that all the time. It's just we got called for fouls, and now we weren't getting called for fouls. So it kind of like we're all bigger guys, not as quick, you know, slower, faster, you know. Guys, so it definitely benefited us for sure.
I know free throws were an issue last year. Are you guys just gonna shoot a bunch of free throws in training camp, or
that's what I'm coaching. You know, he changes it every year. We'll see.
Thanks,
thank you guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
There's Domantas Sabonis from our buddy Sean Cunningham, obviously over there at Fox 40. A couple of dimes in there. First one being Jason Anderson of the Sacramento Bee asking about Domas and the volume in which he'd shoot with the acquisition of DeMar DeRozan. Do we see, you know, you've got DeMar, you've got Malik, you've got a lot of very capable scorers on the floor with you. Are you going to be able to get your volume of shots up? And he kind of lives in the same range, always have, very rarely veers away from that. Even when local radio talk show hosts, beg them to shoot once or twice more per game and get beat up by the entire audience. Like, that's just not what he does. But he says he works on it. He works on it every year. I thought that was a great question by J.A., mainly because he's going to go up at a fit. Like, if he shoots three more times a game, he's going to be efficient with it. Like, he's not going to take bad shots if it's to get from, you know, 14 shots a game to 17 shots a game. I don't even think it's that high. But it's to get from 13 shots to 16 shots a game. It's not like he's going to take three bad shots just to get to the 16. He's going to take the highest efficiency shot he can find. That's what he does. It's what he did last year. It's what he did the year before. Spoiler alert, that's what he's done his entire career. Meaning if he took a couple more shots, like if he takes four more shots, chances are two of them are going in. Now, there are people who would like to see him shoot more from outside, be more of a three-point threat. That's certainly a little bit different part of the story. It's part of the story. That's a lower percentage shot. That he hits relatively well, but he's not going to take a bunch of them. I also really like the question. I think it came from Sean Cunningham about officiating. De'Aaron talked pretty openly. I think it was the exit day media session about the shift in officiating. And you saw Domas smiling right there, talking about how he thinks it helps them, how he hopes that that's how the entire year is officiated. That's where the Kings seem to really kind of find their stride on the defensive end, is when that shift in officiating happened. The Kings got a little bit more physical. De'Aaron was able to get a little bit more physical. The whole roster was able to get a little bit more physical. You had Keon Ellis out there as well. So, that you know, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, Greg over at Train with Matt will tell you, if you're trying to, like, break a plateau, don't make a bunch of changes at once. Make one, see how it works for a little while. If it doesn't, or you want to take it up a notch, that's when you make another one, but you don't make a bunch of them at once. What wound up happening with Sacramento is there was a switch, and it's still one of the most amazing things I've ever think I've seen as an NBA fan. There was a complete shift in the way that the game was officiated. And it allowed Sacramento to play differently. That happened at the same time Keon Ellis started getting a bunch of consistent minutes. So you saw several things happening at once. And it's difficult to pinpoint which one, or at least I'll say to my naked eye, it's difficult to pinpoint which one had the biggest effect. Was it Keon? Or was it the change in officiating? Or was Keon and the change of officiating the perfect combination that the Sacramento Kings needed to get where they ultimately got to on the defensive end? After kind of a lackluster start on that side of the ball, a familiar start on that side of the ball, it shifted. Right now, two of the most important players on the team loved the shift. De'Aaron and Domas. And it's something for Domas to say, yeah, allow the game to be physical. Because he don't get a foul call to save his life. That man leaves games with cuts on his face, black eyes, scratches, bumps, bruises. And the man is standing in front of the entire media contingent in Sacramento saying, yeah, let the game be physical. He probably benefited at least from that change, especially on the, for him, on the offensive end. That'll be a thing to watch league-wide. How is the league officiated to start the season? Can they pick up right where they left off? Do they pick up right where they left off? Is the game allowed to be a little more physical? Or do we see the league start, the season start, the way that it did last year, and then adjustments be made? You hope not. Because I still think altering the way you officiate the game in the middle of the season is one of the most ridiculous things that's ever happened in the history of this league. Just absolutely absurd. You were left to figure out at the most important time of the year how to play defense in a way that you hadn't been playing defense for like 30, 40 games. Again, the positive out of it was the Kings played well in that shift, and De'Aaron and Domas both loved it. And something tells me, don't know, something tells me Keon loved it, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say that DeMar DeRozan probably did too.